If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is proud to be part of the OSIRIS Podcast family, a growing community of music and cultural podcasts connecting music fans like you with conversation, commentary, and of course, music. For more, visit OSIRISpod.com. Before we get to today's show, just wanted to thank you for listening to this episode. Don't forget to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, leave a review, or share this episode with a friend. We've launched the Sound Podcast merch store featuring great designs, including our world-famous bear on tees, long-sleeve tees, hoodies, and much more in various sizes and colors. Check it out at thesoundmerch.com and support the Sound Podcast creators while looking awesome. The show starts now.
There's more at stake to the final person to have spoken. Declare I'm fully woke. Makes for an instant report that our lifespans are short and it's hard to perceive the curve we see in the arc of history. And the power that allures and is sure to corrupt us must constantly be clean with peace, love, and justice. The media's been bought, the legislature's been bought, and our complacency's been bought by four walls of couch. Trashy TV, it's time to dance in the street.
Dance in the street.
Speak in your mind. Our hearts are pulsing a beat.
Dance in the street.
Knowing it's time to get on our feet.
Shoo up, up.
It's time to dance in the street. Poor push to the cold as our rights are being sold with the ascent of a dismal flame like the tail and shame of a monopoly game. For change of rule, we had better stand before there's nowhere left to land. Doomed to history's repeat, it's time to dance in the street. 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 Fate, watch ashore, ship of fools we've seen before, hurtling through space on a ball. What do they want it all. With mortal reams of ammunition and a killer's disposition, they emit a tinny tune with little soul, with a chorus of control. From misguided to sinful is the range, it is their minds will have to change. But they'll display the way and a fire to inspire in the hearts of poignant blood. Metaphor Jesus' blood. Strike up the band, hit the beat. It's time to dance in the street. It's time to dance in the street. It's time to dance in the street. Speak in your mind. It's time to dance in the street. Knowing it's time to get on our feet. It's time to dance in the street. Of human nature's behavior, I don't have to be greedy. I hope you can see that sometimes I am, but I'm trying not to be. Don't want to be jealous. I hope you can see that sometimes I am, but I try not to be. Don't have to be violent. I hope you can see that sometimes I am, but I try not to be. And if it's impossible and all hope, love lays dying, even if we fail, like least fail while trying. On my feet, it's time to dance in the street.
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 It's time to dance. It's time to dance in the street. It's time to dance in the street.
It's time to dance in the street.
Up on our feet. It's time to dance in the street.
You've been listening to Dance in the Street, the title track from Donna the Buffalo's latest album. Donna the Buffalo are, in fact, a band beyond description, blending a whole host of genres into a hodgepodge of styles from folk to country to zydeco to everything in between. The band has had a rotating cast of characters, but the principal songwriters and vocalists, Tara Nevins and Jeb Purrayer, have been at the helm of the herd since day one. Since the release of the White Tape in 1989, they have managed to host festivals, put out records, and tour extensively. That's impressive for any band, let alone one that relies so heavily on touring for revenue. We caught up with Tara and Jeb on the road, and our conversation started when I asked if they ever get tired of the work that is an active touring band.
Sometimes.
Fair.
You know, it's funny, we just did like 11 gigs in a row, and so that was that's the most gigs we ever did right in a row, actually, so it's interesting timing for that question, but yeah, it's definitely still exciting.
There's something interesting sort of every place we go, I guess, you know what I mean?
Well, there's two segments. I mean, there's one, there's the playing music and being able to share that together and stuff like that. That's pretty consistently exciting. And then sometimes the trying to find a open truck stop to do what you know what I mean? You know what I mean? There's just all kinds of like logistical things that may not be quite as riveting as they once were.
Yeah, well, the best part usually is, you know, playing on stage and having that connection with the audience and having a great show. But it's, you know, and a lot of musicians will say the same thing. It's the actual smallest part of the whole thing, you know, because so much of it is the traveling, the logistics, the keeping everybody from losing their minds and meeting their needs and everybody, you know. It appears as a very glamorous lifestyle to a lot of people, but as, you know, the old cliche, it appears, you know, glamorous, but it's actually really not very glamorous. You know what I mean? We're actually in the service industry, so to speak.
Right. <You know? laughs> I guess it's the work part. It's the coordinating, the driving around, the loading and unloading, the sound check, all of that stuff. The work part is the hard part, and I think everybody would agree that work is the hard part. But what, you know, you've been able to do now for a considerable period of time is be able to express yourself once all that stuff is done and get up on stage and perform and sing songs that you've written or covers that inspire you to sing them. And so that must be rewarding. That part must be great.
Well, yeah, fantastic. Of course. I mean, that's why we've been doing it for all these many years that, you know,
the unmentionable amount of years.
Sometimes I just have this interesting sort of view of it lately. Like, you know, there's all these big rock stars and different, you know, all kinds of music and stars in all the different genres and all that. But then, you know, I just think about what we're talking about now, about, like, I just sort of feel like in some ways, you know, you think back to, like, how the musicians just were, like, the paupers that came. They brought in off the street to entertain the kings and the queens, you know, and then they were sent on their way, you know. So sometimes I feel like that, like, we're just sort of, like, you know, sort of the lowly misfits of society that get up on stage and, like, you know, we wag our tails and do tricks up there on the stage to, like, you know, entertain the society, like, we're just these, like, lowly people, you know.
Because you've been
highly regarded lowly people.
Yeah, highly regarded. I think, I'm not sure, but they buy tickets. So at least they buy tickets still.
Yeah.
Believe me, we are some of the very lucky few that, you know, of all the people out there, they're really into music and serious about it and want to do this. I mean, the being able to do it is
the way to do it. Yeah.
You're a part of a very, very lucky, small percentage of folks.
We're very fortunate to have a following that we have and to own the bus that we have and be able to do this and make a living and have the, you know, the love that we do get from the people that we get. You know, we are very fortunate.
Because you've been at this for a certain amount of time, I would imagine that I keep going back to that, but it does speak to the staying power of your music and of the band. I would imagine that the folks that are coming to see you sort of age and range from, you know, college kids to people that have kids now. Is that weird for you to see like the wide spectrum of people that come out to shows these days?
No, it's great. It actually is great, and part of that is that a lot of a lot of whole families together,
right,
are into us and come, and that's so cool, you know. And the kids grow up, and then I think it's really great.
I think also coming from like the festival world where we, you know, we've always been a big part of our life, you know, that range of population has always been a full spectrum. You know, so it's not unusual for us to be in crowds that have all ages, you know.
Our podcast talks to, for lack of a better word, people who are connected with the jam band community. And you guys certainly are that and have been that for a long time. Are you surprised at sort of the resurgence of Americana and folk rock and, you know, even Newgrass in the last, I don't know, 5 to 10 years? It seems that it's been there and it's always been in the consciousness, but it seems that in the last 5 to 10 years, it's really broadened in terms of its appeal and people that are paying attention to these side genres.
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
You know, that might be hard for us to figure because to us, that all those side genres were basically what we've always been into. So, it's kind of hard for us to reflect on, you know, how much more into it society in general is, just because we're always sort of looking at it, you know, and always have been.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole, you know, the development of what's called, you know, the Americana genre, Americana radio chart, Americana spot now in the Grammys, you know, for award, you know, category, whatever. I mean, there's that, you know, which came first, that or, you know, I also think about, you know, there was sort of a need for something and then that came along, but all that music was there. And I think really a lot of it too is the, you know, the whole social media, that music is so accessible now. It's amazing. You know, it's just, it's not as mysterious. It's there for everyone. Everyone's involved. You can hear, and there's so much, you know, it's so tangible now that people are just hearing so many different kinds of music. And let's face it, all this music is great. And before all this, you know, you really just heard what the mass media fed you. And, you know, a lot of people never heard Cajun or Zydeco or much bluegrass or this or that. And now it's just like, I mean, yeah, there's the Americana. There's the Americana genre now, but that was developed, I don't know. I think social media has played a big part in it over the years, and the connectivity between musicians and listeners and styles of music. And
you know, I would also, you know, one caveat to that, you know, I would hate for the Americana genre to get overly defined, you know, because it was sort of like developed as a wide net for a bunch of stuff that kind of was part of a misfit collective, you know, and that's sort of how we fell in there. And then that would be my only one little concern about it.
Except the weird thing about the Americana genre now, it seems like it was a little bit more obscure when it was first sort of coming out. But now it's almost like a lot of musicians that have been around for many, many years. I mean, like us, but I'm talking about like really famous musicians, you know, whose mainstream careers have maybe, you know, peaked and now, you know, kind of are waning and different, you know, now they're kind of all falling into the Americana
right
kind of category. And it's changing the picture of the Americana. thing, you know what I mean? When you have like Hall & Oates, who's been famous for years and years and years, you know, mainstream. I mean, I can't get any bigger.
Yeah.
And now you have someone like John Oates is in the Americana category. You know what I'm saying? Like, this kind of thing is happening now a lot. So it's like, like I think the kind of definition, it's just sort of interesting, the whole thing. But I don't know. It's funny. I mean, I think there's a large part of the population that probably just still, I don't know, there's Pandora, there's Spotify, there's all these different social media things that are presenting and making other kinds of music available to the public. So the public has fortunately been granted this, you know, education and been able to hear all this other music. So you can, and it's undeniably good music. So all of a sudden, you know, the public is appreciating more kinds of music, and more kinds of music are coming into the center and into focus, you know.
Let's talk about your music and Dance in the Street specifically. It's out now for just over a week, and it is your 10th album, not including the live record. But it's been a while since you put out a record. What made you decide to put out a record in 2018? And what took so long for you guys to finally do it?
Well, you have to put out records.
Right.
But we tour so much. We tour so much. It's hard for us.
Well, it's partly we did. There was some. Oh, it's such a long story.
No, we've been trying to get to it. We have tried several times.
Yeah. Part of it is get songs together. Part of it was figuring out how we're going to do it. And then the other thing was just to get the time together. And you know, what method we're going to use, and so on and so forth. So these kind of things play into it.
You'd love to make one every 2 years.
Yeah, that's really what should happen.
Let's break that down a little bit. The first is, and I'm sure a lot of people are curious about this because I know I am, the writing process and determining how many Tara songs get on the record and how many Jeb songs get on the record. Who makes that decision, or is it fairly democratic?
Well,
we make the decision. Jeb and I
keep it very balanced, you know. So
there's no fighting. There's no fighting about that.
We keep a balance by fighting.
Ah, I see. Good answer.
We pretty much always have an even amount of songs, you know.
I think maybe one record has one more of somebody's, but I mean, that doesn't really matter. But it's like, we're definitely present as much as possible a unified artistic message between the two of us, and we wouldn't want that to get out of balance, for Donald.
The songs, though, themselves are so different in approach, and that's likely because you two are very different in approach. So tracking a record and figuring out what's required probably does require a great engineer and producer like Rob Fraboni, right? I mean, that's how you make a great record, right?
Definitely helps.
Yeah, it definitely helps.
There's
a thread, you know, the songs may be different, but, you know, there's a thread, and he definitely helped, you know,
The other thing is, just like Tara was saying, we play live so much, and so when you go from, you know, you're used to playing and having all this energy exchange between a bunch of people and the music and the band, you know, and then you go and you're playing in a studio basically for each other, but you do need to develop an audience, you know, so that's the other thing, that the producer sort of becomes like a micro audience, you know, that you kind of resonate with. It's like, well, is this cool? Is that, you know, happening or is that not happening? So it's basically about like getting it into focus and us focusing on what's
well. We
cool
sat.
About
we did
it.
Pre-production with him. We sat with him and we went through a whole bunch of songs and he kind of came up. He kind of whittled it down and gave his opinion of which out of all the songs he thought would work the best, you know, on the record and together. So yeah, he was definitely, you know, a big part in that.
I would imagine just being on the ranch in El Paso was inspiring enough for the creative juices to flow while you were making this record.
Yeah, I actually ended up writing 3 or 4 songs just while we were there. It was kind of cool. It was a very interesting place, and one of the things that I liked about it, it sort of had this little industrial vibe too, because the Pecan Ranch is in activity, you know. So there's like, I don't know, I'm not a very good vacationer, you know.
I
have trouble going to a resort and hanging out for
relax.
Too long. I get
yeah.
I get super antsy. So this was a cool vibe for me because it had the music thing, and then it kind of had a little industrial bunch of work taking place, and I don't know, I just really dug it.
It was a really beautiful place. It was very, like, it was like, felt like sort of being on the moon or something, because it was it's not in, you know, the pecan, the trees were not, it was not in season. There were no leaves on the trees, so it was 3,500 acres of these bare trees all in straight rows and no grass. It was just this, like, light-colored, like, sandy dirt.
Wow.
And so that was, like, the light blue sky and no leaves on the tree and this, like, just dirt, no green. No, it was amazing.
Very, very cool environment.
Very cool atmosphere. And I, on the other hand, I enjoy vacations. And, No, the place was so beautiful. I mean,
yeah.
I was just constantly taking pictures and videos and taking long walks and you know, it was just very fortunate, you know, living it up out there as we were also working. It was a good combination, really.
You guys have always been into your music, at least, has always been very much a social commentary on what's going on in the world and in the world closer to home in your country, and self-empowerment. And those two themes seem to be critically important right now in your country. How much of that comes through in the record, and how important were those messages for you on this go around writing a record?
That's a good question.
I
think the Dance in the Street is definitely a commentary on some of that.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that kind of strikes me is that we're in such a weird spot, you know, sociologically right at the moment. It almost, to me, is not even a really good place to even start a conversation. The conversation is so low right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it almost, you know, like if somebody's flipping out and then you talk about everything they're flipping out about, it almost gives credence to what they're flipping out about or something. And
right.
So to me, it's a little bit like that. But yeah, a friend of mine made a comment to me, you know, we were talking politics and this and that, and then he goes, well, we sure could use a song like you used to write, he said, you know. And so I kind of was like, all right, you know. So wrote Dance in the Street, which it came out good, you know. But it's at certain times, like if you need to write something or you want to write something, you need to have some sort of focus, or and then certain times are so unfocused and confusing that it makes it difficult to, not all writing needs to draw a conclusion, but you do have to have some kind of idea about, like, all right, well, this is the way maybe it's going to work out, or maybe this is the way it's working right now, you know. So
I also don't feel like you know, in times like these, I feel like a song does not have to be lyrically direct at social commentary. It could be about something or have a certain vibe that you know, that imparts the same kind of empowering feeling or feeling about society, if you know
right.
what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
doesn't have to be an overtly political song. It could be a more personal song, but it could give you a feeling of loving humanity or something, you know what I mean? And feeling positive about being part of a, you know, world community or something. It doesn't have to be a political song. I just sort of feel like that, because songs affect you in such deep and different ways, you know.
And also, you know, just music in general, like Tara's saying, it's like, you're basically, not only is it is there a messaging, like there may be a point to what's being said, but there's also the opening of the window of the person or the listener needs to, you know, feel a loving vibe about life in order to be a corresponding partner in life, you know. And so I feel like music and a lot of what we do is sort of like this general sense of excitement about living that we've discovered through music and each other and the life we enjoy, you know, and trying to be as contagious as possible with that, you know. It's like, it's really cool to be alive. There's a lot of great stuff to do, you know. It seems like there's a lot of people that are very unhappy out in the world and feel disconnected from the really cool parts, you know. And so I think a lot of what we do is like just basically broadcasting an excitement that we found through music.
Just melody of a song alone can do all these things. It might not have anything to do with the lyrics, just the melody and like the color of the song could be a really uplifting and positive move for a group of people or in a positive direction. I mean, so that's just the magic of music. And whether ours is pointed socially or not almost matters, but almost doesn't in a way. It's got a whole overall.
Well,
it could be some politically stuff.
It doesn't matter.
I didn't say it doesn't matter. What I'm just saying is that there could be some songs that are pointed politically that don't have an effect, another one that would, you know. So it depends on a lot of things. There are just a lot of things.
But I think there's a lot of our audience that are feel a lot of things about life in general and maybe kind of feel a little lonely in the world feeling those things, and then when they kind of something about the band and the lyric content and the vibe or whatever, they're like, wow, someone else feels like I do, you know. And they gravitate towards that.
It's interesting, the juxtaposition of Dance in the Street and Motor, because, you know, I guess Motor is sort of the continuation of Dance in the Street in many ways, of the sentiment that's in the first song and then, you know, the second.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Hear it. Yeah, Motor's definitely about, you know, kind of letting go of, you know, whatever way you want to think about it.
Right.
The past, but not holding on, moving forward. Yeah, I mean, it's very positive, very uplifting feeling, you know.
Yeah.
Inspirational.
Yeah.
I'd be remiss if we don't talk about the album cover very briefly. Tara, you drew and colored the album cover, if I understand correctly. Was it just inspired by Dance in the Street and this idea of bringing people, the world, together?
Well, I'm not an artist. First of all, I've never ever done anything like this before. That's the interesting part. But I
think it's pretty good.
Thanks. No, I like the way it came out. I think it's pretty cool. But I can't draw people or anything. I only draw these like weird little characters, and somehow, I don't know, kind of sort of fell towards me to do it. And then, you know, I was working with the title "Dance in the Street," and I just got the idea that, you know. You know, the idea that you see in the picture of, you know, this fellow broadcasting over the planet, dancing the street, you know, bringing together the whole world, and having everybody. And I tried to draw little characters that were different nationalities and types of people. I tried. Like I said, I'm not like I don't do this on a regular basis. But I think it came out cool, and it gave kind of a cool vibe to it, you know.
I always ask guests about, you know, being on the road and, you know, where their tour is taking them for fall tour or winter tour or spring or summer tour. The truth of the matter is you're just on tour. like, constantly. Like, I'm looking at your tour dates now, and when is there any downtime for you guys?
In the winter. I mean, traditionally, we've taken off, like, we've, you know, in, like, middle February to, like, late March. We have taken, like, maybe 4 or so weeks off, like that. That would be the only time that we'd have, like, a real lengthy time off. Otherwise, it's, like, you know, we might have, like, if we skip a weekend, then there's a thing we're off for, like, 10 days, you know, something like that. But, yeah, that's the funny thing about, too, us making a record, you know. Traditionally, I know growing up, and still some bands do, a lot of bands do this, really, where you write, you make a record, you tour with the record, then your tour's done, and then you tour the next time you make a record or whatever. But, yeah, we tour all the time, so we're playing our songs all the time. So, like, on this record, most people, you know, most of our fans have heard pretty much all of these songs. It's not like a surprise, like, oh, new record. Wow, we haven't heard any of these songs. You know, like when you used to buy a record, you didn't know any of the songs. It was like a new record, songs you've never heard. But I'm trying to think on this record if there's a song that nobody's heard before. I don't think there is.
We didn't do Dance in the Street before.
Well, Dance in the Street might be the only one. Holding On to Nothing, we never did before. But pretty much, I Won't Be Looking Back, we never did before, actually, because I was writing it as we were in the studio. So maybe there's like three on there that we had never really done. But we also have a thing, whereas our fans don't mind it if we bring out a new song that we don't even know that well. And we play it. They actually sort of like it. They feel like they're in the, you know, evolutionary process, you know.
Right. Talk about your fans. I mean, the Herd is... probably what keeps you guys going, and besides the fact that, you know, it's a living, I mean, the Herd, your fans are a really big part of Dawn of the Buffalo at this point.
Very much so. Yeah, we're very fortunate.
And we have to reiterate, there's, you don't have to do anything to be in the Herd, but except think you are. There's no union dues or anything like that.
Right.
Or loyalty tests or anything like that.
And you could just listen to our music and like it and not think of yourself as part of a Herd or anything, just a person listening to music.
Right.
It's sort of spring. We have this T-shirt that said Dawn of the Buffalo, and then on the back it said Herd of them, but it was, you know, with a question mark. And,
right.
You know, but it's
spelled H-E-R-D. H-E-R-D. Herd of them.
Yeah. That's great.
It was our original keyboard player a million years ago, Richie Stearns. There's some people probably know from like the Horseflies and String Band. But anyway, he came up with that. Very clever. Heard of him. So that's on the back of a lot of our T-shirts still to this day.
That's great.
But yeah, no, the Herd grew. The Herd is they're self-organized kind of. They grew out of themselves. I mean, it was nothing we did. They kind of formed themselves. It's pretty cool.
The whole thing is really cool. Continued success for both of you and for the band. And can't wait to eventually see you guys live. But also just enjoy your music. And thanks for continuing to do it for this long.
Thank you very much.
One of the things that is really validating for us, and we can't even say enough about it, but, you know, we needed a new bus a couple of years ago. Our other bus died, and we... decided to do a GoFundMe. We'd never done anything like that really before, and we raised $90,000 in 3 weeks.
Wow.
And this was just 2 years, you know. Well, we've had the bus now. This January will be 2 years, right? Yeah, I think so. And that was like just to feel that after being together for so long that still so many people were so supportive was just really an amazing thing. Really amazing for us, you know?
Yeah.
Grateful. Like, so grateful.
Well beyond the money
the statement. The thought, just a thought, you know, just really.
That's great. Well, continued success. Hopefully you won't need another bus for a while, and we'll see you down the road.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Lots of great insight and interplay between Tara Nevins and Jeb Puryear. It's always so cool to get the inside scoop on the goings-on of a band and understand what compels them to carry on. Dance in the Street is a terrific record, one I bet you will enjoy, but the truth is, this is a band you need to see live. So check out their tour dates at dawnofthebuffalo.com and get out and join the Herd. Before we leave you, have a listen to Motor, a Jeb tune, the second track from Dance in the Street.
Been listening to the Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Subscribe to our newsletter today at thesoundpodcast.com/subscribe. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit osirispod.com. Thanks for listening.
Osiris.